We're sitting in downtown Jerusalem with Barbara Sofer, known through her writing in the Jerusalem Post, who has also won an award and will be receiving the award here in Jerusalem soon. And Barbara, can you tell us the name of the award and the significance of it, who's giving it?
I have privilege to be chosen as the winner of the Eliav Sartawi Award, named for Lova Eliav and Issam Sartawi. Lova Eliav is still alive and well and a great member of the Israeli people, a person who has always sought peace, a person who has been involved in politics and in education in this country. And Issam Sartawi was murdered 25 years ago. He was a Palestinian who started his life in Fatah and then was murdered because he wanted to make peace. He was a bit ahead of his time. I wish he were here because he's still ahead of his time, unfortunately. And organization in Washington called Search for Common Ground, a name that I love and an idea that I love, chose one of my articles and named me a 2008 winner of the Eliav Sartawi Award.
Can you tell us about the article that they found so worthy?
The story really begins when another organization invited me to be one of the 60 voices in a book that's just coming out now called 60 Voices, 30 Israelis and 30 Palestinians. And I said to them, meet me at Hadassah Hospital on Mount Scopus, because one of my jobs, I'm a woman of many hats, like many Israelis, is that I'm the spokesperson in Israel for Hadassah, the Women's Zionist Organization of America. And people often talk in abstraction about cooperation. I like to bring people to Hadassah's hospital, particularly the one on Mount Scopus, to see how you really can live together close up. I don't know how many listeners have been to Hadassah Mount Scopus, but when you walk in there, sometimes you think that maybe you've wandered into Amman. There's a very strong Palestinian presence in the hospital. There's a very strong Jewish presence in the hospital, and the only enemy is disease. So I gave that interview. I was interviewed in Hadassah Hospital, and I found that the interviewer elicited from me what I would call my more patriotic, almost jingoistic side. That sometimes you sense that the other person comes in with, whether you guess it for fairly or unfairly, you have a feeling that the person is going to be anti-Israel in some way. And that makes me, it elicits a chip on my shoulder, and that's how I sounded. And when I finished that interview, someone who was listening there subsequently said, well, you know, you would be great to take part in a conference in Jordan. And that was a conference of 15 women, 5 Jews, 5 Christians, and 5 Muslims. And I was invited to be one of the Jews, of course, who came from Israel. I had never been to Jordan, so that was appealing too. And I thought that this would be, it's called the International Religious Initiatives, and the Women's International Network of Middle East or whatever. It's a long name in any case, called WinMENA for short. And there I went to Jordan and took part in this. And the strange part of taking part in this dialogue, I didn't think about the issue of roommates. I knew that I would be one of the Jewish women, and I got to the hotel, and I got to my room, and I opened the door, and there sitting on a bed, which was just a couple feet from mine, was a Palestinian woman from Hebron, from Hebron, we would say in Hebrew. And I said, hello, hello, and she gave me her name, I gave her my name. And we realized that we would be really, you know, sleeping together, very close together, in the same room. And to me, that's always an uncomfortable feeling with a stranger. I'm not the kind who still, at my age, goes to a youth hostel to sleep and says hello to everybody and falls asleep. I'm not so comfortable sleeping with other people. But here we had a very special kind of challenge and an opportunity. And we bonded right away. My article that one talked about our experience together. And it has always been my experience in participating in anything that stretches me beyond the comfort zone that I said that the article is called Beyond the Comfort Zone, and I've often found that any time I put myself in a situation where I stretch beyond the comfort zone and I'm interacting with people who are beyond my comfort zone, that something else happens, that you relate on a different level. And this works for me. I found that she and I were both punctual. We were always among the first to come to the sessions. That we had a certain intellectual bonding. That we were respectful of each other's space and mental space and sound in the room. And that we had a lot to talk about. And so we weren't initially connected through our conflict, which is that she's a Palestinian woman, but as two women who are taking part in a conference. And we've developed a kind of esprit de corps in our room, in a way, that we were both very active participants, and I think we felt proud of each other. I was proud to be her roommate, and I hope she felt the same way about me. So that was a good place to start. And a Thursday night, she found a James Bond movie on TV. And it was the only thing going in English. She knows Arabic much, you know, that's her native language. And she sifted through and found something. We both fell asleep watching James Bond. And we slept very well. This next night was Friday night, was Shabbat. And we had, I was involved in forcing a more extensive Jewish program. Each religious group had to present something, and the initial suggestion was that on Friday afternoon we'd make a few blessings and throw some challah. I had brought challah and wine from Jerusalem and other food as well. And I said, no, that's not the way we do it. We have a Friday night dinner, and I'd like to do that. Well, how are you going to do that? You're in a dining room in Jordan and so on and so forth. I said, I've done it in the weirder dining rooms of my life. So I spoke to the dining room staff, and they found some white tablecloths. And we had candles, and we demonstrated candle lighting. And some of the Jewish women weren't used to lighting candles. But here we were lighting candles, explaining the beautiful elements of the Sabbath table. And that was a very nice setting. We came back to our room after the program, and my roommate had participated in many dialogues, but she'd never shared a room with an observant Jewish woman, someone who keeps the Sabbath very strictly and keeps the Jewish dietary laws very strictly. And for her, it was new and interesting and genuine. So she asked me what could be done and not done. And she realized that TV wasn't in the program for the evening. I wouldn't have said anything. She's allowed to watch TV. I just would have closed my eyes. Instead, we spent the evening talking, and somewhere in the middle of the night, we solved all the problems of the Middle East, and then we really slept well. So we had a very special bonding experience, and we hope to meet again. As it turns out, she's left her town and is now living in San Francisco, so that for her own reasons, we know that the situation of Palestinian women isn't simple, particularly those who are outspoken. And she is brilliant and talented and wonderful. And I'm hoping I'll be in San Francisco, I think, in the spring, that we'll have a chance to catch up and continue our fascinating talk. In the meantime, we're on Facebook together.
Do you remember the solution that you guys worked out? It sounds like we should all be knowledgeable about what are the possibilities for living together.
Well, I think that first of all, we demonstrated to each other that we'd like to live together. Neither of us liked it, that we couldn't get together easily. I said to her, oh, come on, you know, I'll meet you anywhere in Jerusalem, old city, new city. She said, I can't come easily to Jerusalem. You come to Jericho. We'll have fun in Jericho. I said, can't come to Jericho. And finally, we've discovered that the only place we possibly could meet was on the street in Hebron that is near the double cave, a place where Abraham is buried and our mutual 4444444444 father. But there's no place to sit down there, so we didn't love that either. So we realized that what we need to do is create space that we can actually get together. That was number one. That's on a more personal level. But we kind of worked out a system of a trust building system, in which we would set up periods of 6 months in which areas in the West Bank, we weren't talking so much, we talked about Gaza, but we're going to start in the West Bank, that areas would declare themselves terror-free for 6 months. And at the end of 6 months, all roadblocks would go down into those terror-free areas. That we both felt that 6 months was a sufficient time to prove goodwill for both sides. And then we would create open borders, and we would start actually in that problematic city of Hebron where she lived, or other areas, and that's how we would move along, and to see if we could, because nobody likes living with roadblocks. I don't like not being allowed to go to Bethlehem. I'll tell you the truth, I'd like to go back to my tailor in Bethlehem very much. Simple things. And I don't like not being able to go to Bethlehem. She doesn't like not being able to come to Jerusalem. And we'd like to try to dismantle some of the walls that separate us. But both of us agreed that that would be impossible until we established a time of peace. We're sitting here in my office in Jerusalem. This morning, my daughter-in-law was nearly killed by a Qassam rocket that was in Ashkelon, where she works with disadvantaged children. And those are actions that make it very difficult for me to be a trusting Israeli. And she understood, my roommate understood that I needed those gestures of trust and real elements of trust, and that I could go further. We both looked at the Intifada as a nihilistic, foolish, destructive period in everybody's lives. And also, it was important for me for her to condemn the genocide bombings on the buses, which she did. And all of us realized that that is, you know, terrible for the Jews and terrible for the Palestinians as well. So that we had a lot in common in terms of our thinking, without becoming each other's Uncle Toms. We felt that we could establish a basis on an equal ground, which makes me so thrilled that the organization called Search for Common Ground is giving me this award. Many dialogues are patronizing, and I think that's exactly where we don't have to go. I have no interest in any kind of dialogue like that. No interest in a dialogue that begins with the big bad Israelis, and the noble romantic Palestinian. I think we should have no blinkers in our eyes. If we ever had them, the Intifada blew them off, and it's time for us to grow up and to look at each other in the eye and to form and to start working in real to make peace in this part. What a waste of all our talents, our energies, our resources. We need to compete with the rest of the world. We have the brains on both sides, Jewish brains, Palestinian brains. We ought to be working together to make this the best place in the world instead of the place that we have right now.
And are you continuing with other groups to work in this area, the dialoguing and attempting to bridge the gaps?
Tomorrow I'm going to something that I like. Tomorrow I'm going to something that I like that I've been to once before, called Let's Make Up. It's a group of women who get together to have makeup done. And I took part in one session before, and I liked it. A Palestinian woman came in. I couldn't stand her opening introduction to who she was. I mean, how many times can you say occupation in one sentence? And I was almost ready to go. But then the makeup artist came, and we talked about makeup and wrinkles. And soon, before you know it, my Palestinian colleague across the table looked at me and said, "You know what? I have somebody in the Palestinian Authority who could give you Botox at a really discounted rate." And she said, "Come with me. I'll help you get rid of the wrinkles." And that was, I would call, the most genuine part of the conversation. Like, you know, stop telling me about the occupation. I'll stop talking to you about the suicide bombers. And you know what? Let's go together and get rid of some of these wrinkles and see what we can do together. And I saw it both in a literal fashion and in a figurative way. Let's find the things that bond us and let's get beyond this nonsense. So that's something. I'm going to that again tomorrow. And then next week I'll be in Washington taking part in a play, a dramatization of the 60 Voices, and involved with some of the issues that are of dialogue. A woman from Hebron will be going as well, a different woman from Hebron, someone, you know, I don't know if I'll be able to establish a relationship with her, but I'm willing to give it a try. Unhappily, I want to tell you that I don't think most just plain talk groups amount to much, except blah, blah. People say, well, it's good they're talking. I thought in the Intifada that most of that talk just disappeared. I like to see reality, which is why I like the model of Hadassah Hospital so much. Because, you see, at Hadassah Hospital, you could say, well, it's medicine, everything is okay. But, you know, people are not in an ivory tower. The same hospitals have seen more terror victims than any place else in the country. They've seen the gore and the destruction and the death that's caused by terror. They've dealt side by side with Palestinians and Jews who've been injured in this conflict. The same tables have the same, if you check the DNA, you'd find that it has, that both Jews and Palestinians have bled on the same cots. 22 members of the Hadassah staff have lost first degree relatives. Some of those are Jews, some of those are Palestinians. Jews and Palestinians work together to heal. We spend $1 million a year to keep the terrorists out of the hospitals. So we're dealing at the same time not with something that's really in an ivory tower, not in La La Land. And at the same time, the medical setting elicits our best self and not our worst self. So that's an ideology, and I've seen it happen. So I like to see reality. I don't like to see all this talk of what's going to be and how we're going to do it. And yes, this is so great, huggy, huggy. What I like to see is Jews and Palestinians involved together in the same programs and grown-ups. I also am against children's programs. I don't think that outside of a supervised school setting in which you have educators involved, that informal settings I have seen very often don't accomplish too much either, I'm sorry to say. I would rather have a soccer game than a talk. That just seems to me that works rich much better. I love to see Jews and Palestinians on the same teams when they're playing soccer. I think that's better than sitting and talking about it. Let's just get up and kick a ball.
The thing I wanted to ask you is your columns in the Post are quite unique for, as you describe yourself, an observant or somebody would say religious Orthodox Jewish person. Do you describe the style of stories that you write?
Well, I am Orthodox. I do call myself Orthodox. I'm a woman who goes with my head covered. I'm strictly observant in terms of what I eat, my dietary laws, and observing the Sabbath. My favorite moment of the week is sitting down at my Shabbat table, and I've had a very wide variety of guests there. I love having people around the table. I really do feel it is a taste of the world to come. Not always the cooking, but indeed I do make a lot of different dishes so that we have a kind of pluralistic menu as well. I think that I am a strong believer in Judaism, and that my belief in God, it gives me a lot of strength that I feel that in my busy life, my belief in God, my observance of Judaism, my spiritual side, is what allows me to make it all work. That it gives me the energy, it gives me hope, and I'm in a person who finds strength in prayer. And because I feel so strongly about Judaism, then I feel that I'm in a position to be able to engage people with other beliefs. I feel that many people, particularly women, get worn down, that we need to build to strengthen our spiritual side at home where we live. And I not always to go away, let's say, to a hilltop. That's a kind of a fantasy. But to be at home with God in every sense, and that does give me hope. I think I try to look at the positive in life and to see the signs of beauty and the potential. So that really motivates me. I think I like very much the kind of Hasidic answer to the question: is the glass half full or the glass half empty? Stop measuring, lift up that glass and say, L'chaim. To life.
Thank you very much again, Barbara Silver.